Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry, and I'm joined today by the brothers McAllister. I've got Terry and Paul, Paul and Terry, if you want to be alphabetical about it. Gentlemen, how are we?
I'm good, man. Thanks. Glad to be back on.
Right on. Paul, you okay?
I'm fine. Still frustrated about the result, but other than that, not too bad.
Yeah. Saturday was sort of frustrating. We had the Huddersfield boredom non-game, whatever you want to call it, paint drying. And then, like, right after that, I had to go off to my kid's game where, you know, he played keeper for the first half, and he doesn't normally play keeper. And second half, he was kind of not playing like his normal self. So I just was in, like, the worst. I went home and cleaned up a storm, gentlemen. Get the negative out. Get the bad vibes out. But yeah, yesterday was a lot better. We went and watched a local university game, Wake Forest, and it's funny story. Before we get into this, the depression of Huddersfield, we were watching, it's actually the women's team at Wake Forest University play, and walking past us, one of the men's players walked by, and my son has met these players before, and so I said, why don't you go say hey? So he runs over there, my son's six. Okay, he runs over there to say hey, and I notice it's taking him a long time. And I look over, and my kid has sat down beside this guy and is just watching the game with him, talking soccer, football, whatever you want to call it. It's whatever. And so I notice more men's players for Wake Forest are walking by. Pretty soon, my kid is watching the game, talking strategy with like 10 to 15 of these men's players watching the game. And I am in that weird predicament as a parent. Like, I'm excited for him. That's really cool. But do I get him? Is he being annoying? You know what I mean? It's that really weird, like, I don't know what to do. But, you know, my wife was like, you know what? Let's relax. It's really cool. Let's just let it. So he watched the whole damn game with him. And Wake won. So it's like we had a good football Sunday, you know, rather than the meh from Saturday. Yeah. All right, so now that we got the positivity out of the way, let's sum this up, guys, for the podcasters out there. We're going to start with our Huddersfield reaction, and a preview of it will be a long groan. That's what it's gonna sound like. Next, we're going to have a segment about what to do with Tom Davies. And the brothers McAllister, I'm sure, will agree on every point, and they will not be in contention on any points. They'll be in total accord. Just kidding. They argue over this one. And you know what? I'm going to try my best to be impartial. All right, just say it. My referee kid. next, we're gonna talk kind of a remember when segment. Remember when Red Bull Everton almost happened. Did it almost happen? I don't know. But I remember when it was possibly a thing, when it was in the media. So we're going to talk about that. Strange. And then we'll finish up with some transfer rumors of the past. You know, remember when. These guys might remember these possible transfers. I'm familiar with two of the three of these players. I actually knew about one of these rumors. But yeah, we'll go into those. So, gentlemen, on to the first segment. Huddersfield. Reaction. Do either one of you guys actually get to go the game Saturday?
I did.
I didn't, unfortunately.
All right. So, Paul, let's not dump out all of our problems just to begin with. Could you start with and point to one problem that led to us not grabbing 3 points on Saturday?
Huddersfield were just very, very well organized and did a job on us, basically. I think a lot of it owed to the fact that Huddersfield played very, very well. A lot of our top players played badly because Huddersfield made them play badly. I thought it wasn't a case of we were getting a lot of chances and just wasting them, or a lot of players were just, I mean, players had off days, but it wasn't a case of where any other day, if Huddersfield played like that, we'd have beaten them. I think our best team would have found that hard. I mean, I think if you'd have had two or three players available who weren't available, we probably would have just got the job done, got over the line. But I think Huddersfield deserved the due there. They really played well and a lot better than I thought they were going
to. So Paul's main issue is the fact that Huddersfield set up to frustrate and had a solid game plan, and they executed that game plan. That is not where I was expecting you to go, and I think it's a fair point. Terry, one problem that led to us not grabbing 3 points.
Lack of creativity, I think. And I think if we've got all of our players available, that Richarlison, Bernard, players like that, I think we might, when teams come to your ground to do a job like that, you can't try and do what we did try and do, which was put Nias on and put two up top. You can't go linear with your attacks. You can't be predictable, because teams like that love to defend against crosses, balls straight up the middle. You need someone with a little bit of flair, a little bit of skill to unlock a defence like that. And the better we get as a team, the more attacking, the more settled we become, the more teams will try and do this to us. This is where Roberto Martinez first started to go wrong, was teams started to expect Everton to play great football around them. So they just made themselves hard to break down and deep, and he never found the answer to that. I'm not suggesting that that will continue as a problem under Silva, but it's something we're going to run into again. And I think when we've got all of our players fit and they're more of a well-gelled team, I think we'll have more, we'll be more capable of breaking it down. Whereas I just think the pieces, the players we needed to unlock that door on Saturday weren't there. We can't speak for every player, especially the new ones, whether they're going to be good or not. But even ones we do know about, Richarlison, a full game from Walcott, they may have made the difference to get that final pass, that final ball. I agree with Paul, a good performance by Huddersfield, but one that came a little bit too early for us. If we'd have had this in a few weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, we may have broken them down.
Another good point. So Terry's pointing to fitness and availability, but additionally, you know, I guess cohesion as well. I honestly, rewatching that game today, it was such a careless, sloppy performance where we were giving the ball away, trying to thread the needle with some of our passes, passes that weren't there. And the ones that were there, just making silly, misplaced passes by, 3 and 4 yards, just wide margins. And as you know, very often this can be a game of inches, all right. And it was just not inch perfect precision when it comes. And there were players that I feel like typically execute that were not executing this weekend, and. When it's a sloppy performance, number one, you have to blame the opposition some. You have to think Huddersfield were frustrating us. So I think go back to your point, Paul. But I'm wondering mentally, because we've seen some of this sloppy, careless play before. We saw that against Bournemouth as well, at least in the first half. And I'm wondering if it's a mentality thing. I'm wondering if it's a mental preparation thing where we are just trying to play so quickly, but we're not able to do that. I mean, Davis is a good example. Right? He gave the ball away a lot on Saturday. But we're not getting into him right now. We have a whole segment for him coming, so stay tuned for that. Mine is just is careless and sloppy play, not actually being focused on what you are at, being mindful of what you're doing. Man of the match. To go a little more positive, Terry, who was your man of the match on Saturday?
Probably Kurt Zouma. I think he really impressed. He looks the part. He looks like he's going to be a good fit at the back. And it was hard to pick a standout performance, because the rest of the team were laboured somewhat. I mean, I just think things not coming off, they're trying to force it. So the only one who looked comfortable, well, the only one of the few players who looked comfortable, which was Zouma, but Digne runs him close.
Paul?
It's take your pick between Digne and Zouma, but I would just edge it towards Digne, because he got another assist, another brilliant ball into the box for a goal. Again, looked unflappable, was always in the right position, did everything that was expected of him, and he was kind of left on his own for large periods of the game. Calvert-Lewin was kind of not really playing out wide. He was more of an inside, tucked-in type of wide forward. So Digne basically had to play left-back and left midfield for large periods of the game on his own. And he coped well. He didn't run out of legs, I don't think. I mean, I'd imagine that's why he was brought off, because he played 90 minutes in the week and Silva didn't want to overload him. But I think he could have been left on and been absolutely fine. So Zuma was impressive, very impressive. But I think Digne takes it for me, just on the account that he assisted another goal, and he just looks really, really unflappable and really, really comfortable in that position. And I want to see him stay at left back for a good long time.
Those are the two names I wrote down. Evidently, we all watched the same game, which is comforting. My initial thought was give it to Digne because of the assist. However, Zuma played the whole match, whole 90 minutes. If I'm going to be not wishy-washy and have to pick one, I'm going to say Dean. That's what I'll say. Should anyone be dropped after that performance, guys? Or was that just kind of an all-around team? You know what I mean? Do you look at certain players and say, let's bring someone else in for the next one after the break? Paul, what do you think?
Well, it depends on what you define by dropped, because I think there's quite a few players in that team who wouldn't be playing if all the players were fit. So it's basically, you're saying, do you think these players deserve to be demoted? Basically, do any of those players need to be told, right, that was not good enough, you're not going to play for a certain amount of this period? No, I don't think any player deserves to be really chewed out over it. Not to any great extent. But there's definitely some players who are looked at and thought, yeah, you don't belong in our strongest 11. I think there was at least four players who I think, if everybody's fit, I think you belong on the bench and you wouldn't be the team. You don't belong in Everton's strongest 11. That's what I'd say. There's quite a few players there who prove that when all the other players are fit, they don't deserve to keep their place. But I wouldn't say dropped as in vote them and run them down and make them feel worthless. I think they just kind of have to be use a bit more sparingly.
That's a kind way of saying it. Terry, what do you think?
I wouldn't go as far as to say dropped as in like anyone played so badly that they need to be sort of blacklisted, but some of the players there clearly aren't preferred choices in their position. So for example, when Richarlison is back, you're not going to get Calvert-Lewin on the left. And when Garnaguy is back, you're probably not going to get Davies in the team straight away. That doesn't mean, oh, that's it, they were terrible, drop them. But everyone's on a clean slate, but there clearly are players who, until proven otherwise, are better than others. So I think if we came back from the international break and everyone was fit, I think there'd be three, four changes to that team.
I agree with you guys. I guess the reason for the question is that it's not an abandon all hope, ye who enter here type of scenario. We were having to fill some gaps. Although it was kind of a watching milk curdle type of performance, it still could have been worse if we're going to be... It's a crappy way of being positive, right? But it actually could have been. And I think if we kind of keep that in mind... Our depth hopefully will be growing from experiences like this. You know, Davis is depth, and he is 20. So players like Calvert-Lewin, what are we gonna do with that guy? Because he's playing and he's scoring, and Richarlison comes back. What, you know? So it's gonna be interesting to see if Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison swap out with Tosun just to give us a different type of a look late on in the game. Curious, just saying. Just to go ahead and lay this out there, not super enthused about the officiating at this one, guys. I thought Huddersfield time wasted going early, very early in the first half. They were just chilling on throw-ins, just hanging out, just taking their sweet time. It's pretty frustrating to watch, to be honest with you. Paul, I can imagine being at the ground, that would kind of anger you as well.
I had it at 15 minutes when they first started doing it. 15 minutes, and their goalie was already, kicking the ball, rolling it very slowly back to the 6 yard box, where he's going to take the goal kick, walking all when the ball boy throws in the ball, picking it up very, very slow and carrying it back. And their throw-ins, their player, whenever they get a throw-in, the guy who's not taking the throw-in would pick the ball up, walk 5 yards away with it, and then roll it along the floor back to the guy who's going to take the throw-in. It's just time wasting, and it was really, really frustrating. But as I said back earlier on, if you are Huddersfield and you're going into that game, that's exactly what you'd want from your team. They came to get a positive result. They got a positive result, and it's just the onus is on us to break them down. We should have known they were going to try and do that. I said last week during the previous pod that if they came and tried to play very positive and were playing open, I think they were setting themselves up for a hiding if they did that, and I didn't expect them to. And lo and behold, they didn't. They just came. They threw every They came. They saw. I wouldn't say they conquered, but they succeeded in what they came to do. They chose the smart tactics. They had the right game plan, and every player in that team to a man seemed to pull it off perfectly, and they got the points that they came for. So again, in future, we're going to face that again. We're going to face those problems again. We can't just keep complaining, saying, "Oh, it's not fair. The other team are taking too long. They're time wasting." Well, as the attacking team and as the home team and as the better team, the onus is on you to go and take the 3 points yourself and score and make it so they can't waste time, because they have to catch up to us. They wouldn't be time wasting if we took the lead at any point in that game, and we didn't. We had to chase them all game. So, sum up, really, I don't blame them one bit for doing what they did. Frustrating, but that's just what teams have to do when they're down there and they come to a big team and their backs are against the
Terry,
wall.
you see something like that and you expect it. You do expect it. And you kind of, I mean, like Paul said, I don't know necessarily know that I blame them. I guess who I point to are the officials, who they're the ones who can do something about it. I'm trying to figure out what, besides playing well and taking advantage of your opportunities, as the team who's being kind of screwed out of time, the officials can do something about that, or we can execute better. What do you do in a scenario like that when the other team's wasting time? Do you start crowding around the other team and start yelling at them like a lot of the teams in other leagues do? What do you do in that case?
If you want a team to stop time wasting, just take their advantage of them. If you go ahead, like Paul said, if you take the lead, they can't do it. What's the point? They're defending a defeat. So, I honestly, time wasting is only effective if you're drawing or losing, as yourself, if the other team are winning. They were drawing for the majority of that game. They only led for about, was it 90 seconds or whatever it was, a very short amount of time they had the lead. So for more or less all of that game, they were defending a point. If at any stage we could get through them, we could find a way through, and we'd went in the lead, they wouldn't have been doing it. So, I mean, I could go on all night about how poor the officiating has been so far in the league on several different aspects. So it's just been poor, poor, poor from the start of the kickoff throughout the season. But that's always going to be the way. You're always going to get inconsistent referees. There's no VAR, there's no trick that'll stop teams time wasting, they'll always do it. So just take the advantage of time wasting off them.
All in agreement here. What you have to do is create more opportunities and actually execute them. When you need to, and we weren't creating many opportunities, and the ones we did create flew over the bar. I will point out Tosin getting punched in the face. That's a
Yeah, I
thing
saw
that
that.
happened. And Meunier took a swing at Holgate after Holgate had been holding onto his shirt. Literally turned around and did that to him. Didn't hit him, but it's okay to do that in the Premier League. Don't nudge anybody with your forehead, though. That's the lesson here. All right? You can take a swing, just don't let it hit anybody.
Unless you're Phil Bardsley against Man
I was trying
United,
to
then it's
explain
fine.
that situation to my 6-year-old son, trying to explain why one got a red card and the other one got to just take the person's legs. You know what I mean? It's so hard to explain to a 6-year-old because he thinks it's dumb.
But even after that, they put heads together and Bardsley puts his head in forward more aggressively, well, about the same, if not a little bit more aggressively than Richarlison did. and he got a yellow card like for the identical offence just because Rashford retaliated. It's just the referees are ridiculous. That's the worst one of double standards I've ever seen. Same offence, two players got different punishments.
It's not right when an official can just make a really bad call and then he can just walk off and have to explain himself. That wouldn't be tolerated in any other line of work that I can think of. If you are getting things wrong that badly consistently, then something would happen. Something, whoever is in charge of the referees, whoever's deciding, you know, your Premier League quality level refereeing, you only referee the Premier League games. Whoever decides that, whether I think it's Mike Ashley still, not Mike Riley, I think his name is Mike Riley, the former United guy. I think he's still the. I think I can't remember what his title is. He's the head of the Referee Association. He's been in charge for about 10 years of that, and the last 10 years officiating in this country has gone down the toilet, and it can't be a coincidence. Just referees, I understand they've got a very hard job. I understand that it's what they have to put up with is something that the average person probably wouldn't be able to deal with, but there's just too many referees in this country, officials as well, linesmen are quite bad. They just make terrible calls consistently, and they're not reprimanded, seemingly. And whenever anyone calls them out on it, whether it's a manager, whether it's a player, whether it's a pundit who used to be a player, whether it's even a TV presenter, they suddenly get people screaming at them saying, oh, you can't say this about referees, leave referees alone, referees are the victims, blah, 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 blah. No, I'm sorry. I agree with some of that to a point, but there should be a point where a referee is held accountable and he should be forced to sit in a studio and say, OK, why did you make that call? And do you feel that the same about that call now that you've watched it back on TV? Because one referee's mistake could be the result of a team getting relegated, or it could be the result of qualifying for the Champions League and not qualifying for the Champions League. Could cost the club millions based on one person's human error. And if he makes a human error, they should be forced to explain themselves for it. So that's just where I stand. Referees, I really want to see some more responsibility taken by whoever is in charge, the FA, the Referee Association, whoever. Whoever is in charge of this, just you have to do something because this standard is terrible.
Are there any songs or chants about poor officiating? Is that something that actually happens? Please tell me that happens, because I don't hear it. But it's hard to you know actually understand the words when you're watching on TV. But there has to be.
Yeah, there's the referee's a wanker. It's quite the common one. It's very British, but yeah, if the referee's a wanker, the most widely used. Okay. And yeah,
there was a one-off funny one a couple of years ago. I think we were playing Arsenal, and someone was shouting. It was kind of a spare of the moment type thing. Who's the Cockney? Who's the Cockney? Who's the Cockney in the black? And he was giving them absolutely everything. So that was just a spare of the moment one. But yeah, the one Terry said that,
because I feel like it's been pretty merited lately. Three-word reviews. All right. The question was put out on Twitter. What are your three-word reviews on this particular match? Mr. Blue Sky at Bobby B AFC said work in progress. That's fair. Paul Shanahan at Paul Shaners 10 says Zuma looks good. Yes, he does. Earthling Paul at My Only Everton says we'll be all right. He used a contraction, so technically it's three words. Adrian at Adrian Hogg says on to the next. Simo S-I-M-O at on Andy Simo 5 says zonal skid marking. I think that's my favorite. That's gross. Like that, yeah. And so apt. And Big Mo Schneiderlin Yellow Streak at Charlatan EFC asks, is Allardyce back? It really felt like it on Saturday. really quick, we will say Lookman did play. That happened. That is something that happened. Lookman played. So, I actually almost set up a goal, too. So, yeah. Could have been worse. All right, so I guess that's it, guys, for our Huddersfield reaction. Talking about Tom Davies, what to do with Tom Davies, very polarizing figure all over social media, all over the world, and also all over this fam. These two guys, they have differing views on old Tom, and right now, I'm going to see where I fall after hearing these guys out. I have a feeling I'm probably going to agree with both of them in one way or another, because I'm just a sappy, kind fellow. So, gentlemen, each of you, I will begin with Paul, because I started with Terry last one. Make your Davy statement. Your opening statement, please, gentlemen. Paul, what do you got about Tom? What do we do with this guy?
I want to preface this in the sense that I don't hate Davis. I want Davis to succeed just as much as anybody, and I think Davis will succeed long term, providing that he is coached properly and used properly. But over the past year, basically, since Ronald Koeman went, basically, Tom Davis's level of performances have just consistently not been good enough for me. He's played far more than any other young player. He's not been injured at all in that time, so it's not even like he's, you know, he's been in and out, he's been stop-start. He's played an awful lot of games, probably overloaded, and just the amount of performances where I thought, yeah, he really made a difference today. He really, you know, the team was better for having him there. I just, the few and far between, and it happened for a while. He's very, very poor against Bournemouth. He was, for me, the worst player against Huddersfield. He was comfortably the worst player on the pitch, and he played the full 90. Now, I know that's not his fault. I know he doesn't pick himself. I know he can't decide to take himself off. But for me, he's being put in the spotlight too much. I didn't agree with him being made captain in the Carabao Cup, because I thought that put a spotlight on him that was unnecessary. That was going to get a lot of people talking about him. I would have played him, but I would not have given the captaincy. And to play him again during this week. Now, I know we've got a few injury problems, but for me, Davis is not developed enough yet to be a starter in our team consistently. I think Davis is still at the point where if he's going to not go out on loan, then he has to be playing between 20 to 25 games. He can't be playing close to 30, over 30, for me, even in a season if we had Europe, which we don't this season. I just think he's very, very young. He's very, very raw. He does have qualities there to work with. But my point on him is a lot of the criticism he's getting, a lot of it is valid and a lot of it is justified. I know there's always a couple of idiots who go over the top, but a lot of the criticism he's getting is deserved. And I think people who are getting to the stage where they're fed up now and they feel like, no, this kid needs to be, he needs a bit of tough love now. It's not fair that just because he's local and because he's got a bit of a quirky personality, people just don't want to hear a word against them. When there's a lot of players who are not local and don't have the background that he's got, who didn't get anywhere near the amount of opportunities that he got, and yet they were told to basically sod off, and that nobody's sad to see them go. Whereas players like Davis, he's been given far more opportunities than a lot of them, and for a long time now, he's not made good on any of them. So my point on him is, I think he's a good player, quality-wise, but he's been not good enough recently, and the book needs to stop now.
Terry, your opening statement, sir.
Right. Tom Davis was a kid who made his debut under Ronald Koeman halfway through his first season. And when he came into the side, he was very, very young. He was, I think he was 17 maybe just about to take, yeah, 17 to 18. When he came into the side, he was full of energy, full of good movement, full of, so just, he had it. He came into the team and he freshened up the midfield. He took Idrissa Gueye's place at first. And then not a couple of games later, he was part of a middle three with Schneiderlin, who was still playing really well at that point, Idrissa Gueye and him. And that was the middle three. And his role was to make the breaks forward from that middle three. He wasn't a number 10. He didn't sit off the striker. He didn't do any of that. He would just make the run beyond the striker from deep. He thrived in that position. He played really well at that time. He looked like he was going to be the next big thing, following on from Ross Barkley, who'd cooled off a lot at that point. Then, the next season, in the summer, we bought an array of players, especially in midfield. Tom Davis then fell down the pecking order. We all know what happened to the team in the big picture when it was a mess and it needed fixing. And Tom Davis then only came back into the team under Sam Allardyce. Now, in 2 years, two and a bit years that he's been a regular first team player, as in like a senior squad player, he's had three different managers who are all very different in style. He's had his development stopped and started. He's been played in a variety of positions. He's played all types of different midfield roles. Some of them he's good at, some of them he isn't. His confidence will be on the floor. People give him more abuse than they give any other player. I'm not going to sit here and suggest that he's not playing badly when he is playing badly. He's having a run of poor games. But where has it got to the point now where young players don't, once they play badly for a couple of games or they spell or even half a season, you just forget about them and farm them out on loan? They need to play their way through it. Tom Davis is not going to be the first team choice when everyone is fit in this team. But at the minute, he is the depth, and there's an injury crisis in midfield, so he is starting games. Okay, Huddersfield, terrible game. He was poor. But people forget, because he's been around for a few years, that he's 20 years old. He's still very young. He's had no coherent development as a player since he broke into the team, because the club has not been in a position to give him that. He's had his position changed, his manager changed, all the messages he's taken in, he'll have had Koeman telling him to do it one way, he'll have had Allardyce telling him to do another, now he's got Silva telling him to do another. He needs to play his way through it. He could still come good. I still believe he will come good. I think it's ridiculous the amount of venom he gets. I don't know whether it's because he's a young player, people like expect more of him, or it's easier to criticise a young player who's local. I don't think that protects him. I think that hurts him more than anything. And I think, when did we get to the point where we didn't look after our young players as supporters? And we started, I don't know, just picking on them? Because I think Davis gets it worse than any other player. I really do. I think he gets it worse than any of the foreign players, anything like that. I just think we need to relax and sort of take a step back and just realise he's a young kid who's trying to learn the game as he's going along. He's not even 21 yet, and he's had more upheaval in his career than some players have before they're 28.
All right, so seemingly, let me get this straight, make sure I'm on the same page with you guys. All of us agree that he's not a starter in this team right now. Right?
No.
When everyone is healthy, he is not a starter. He is on the bench. He's depth, correct? Do we all agree with that?
Yes.
No.
Oh, you
no,
don't?
Not quite.
You think he might be a starter?
As in, if everyone was fit tomorrow, he wouldn't start because he's playing badly and Schneiderlin has come into form. Whereas last season, it was the opposite. Schneiderlin didn't deserve to play towards the back end.
Totally
agree
with that.
If Tom Davies was to, if you were to snap your fingers and Tom Davies would get his mojo back and go back to the way he was with Ronald Koeman when he first broke in, I think Davies would be a serious shout to play in centre midfield ahead of Morgan Schneiderlin if all these parameters were met. But as things stand now, no, he wouldn't be. But long term, I'd have him in the team a lot quicker than most.
Long term is a little bit different, and I we'll get there in just a minute, because I like the kid. You know, I like Tom Davies so much. The goal he scored against City, I took that and I cut it side by side with a goal that my kid scored in indoor, and I put it to Dueling Banjos, because it was like the same moves. You know what I mean? It was really cool. And my kid's first kit, it's Tom Davies. You know, I feel like my kid's the only kid with a Tom Davies kit in all of North Carolina. I don't think any other kid has that. I'm a big, and I like the fact that he's unique. He's different. He's cool. He's cooler than I am. I've never been cool. It's just, watching that game today, rewatching it, and he gives the ball away so much. However, he wasn't the only one giving that ball away repeatedly. Were there other players who have lately who have performed poorly that are not getting the same criticism that might support your point, Terry, that you were talking about how maybe he's catching it worse than other players should be getting it?
Not so much. Coleman for the past two games has been pretty poor.
That's sort of the one I had in mind.
I love Coleman.
Not fair. That's not fair in my opinion. But
it's okay. You'll get your chance, bud.
No, it's not the same. Davis has been playing poorly a lot longer than Coleman. As Coleman's is only two games, but what I mean, people are so quick to spit acid, spit venom at Tom Davis, but they won't for some of the players. It takes a lot more. How long did it take for people to turn around on Schneiderlin? Schneiderlin was strolling about the pitch all season last season, and people only really started to get onto him when it was December. Like, and Sigurdsson had a run of poor games. Now, these are good players, and they played their way back out of form, back into form, rather. But Tom Davis seems to be, I don't know whether he's younger or because he's local or because he's trendy. I mean, that doesn't come into it for me, but it might for others. They've got no patience with him. He's a 20-year-old player. How many other 20-year-old players in the Premier League would get the amount of abuse that he gets from his own supporters when he puts a ball to play or misses his touch? I just think it's ridiculous. I just think we've got a hair trigger for Tom Davis.
Paul, you've been wanting the floor. You've got it.
No, there's a few things there. I categorically couldn't disagree with more. We'll start with Schneiderlin. Schneiderlin, yeah, it was poor from the start of the season to about December when it really blew up on him. Tom Davis, I want to say he's not going through a poor run of form. This has been his run of form since Christmas. That's a really, really, really long run. I'm not saying that this is him. He's leveled off now, not at all. But when was the last time he had a good run of form? When was the last time he had like 3 or 4 games where you think when absolutely he was great? I can't figure that since Koeman went.
He was good last season when Davies, Garner and Rooney were in the team, and it started with that Leicester performance where Coleman first came back. Davies at that point in a middle three with Garner and Rooney. That was the middle three, and he was playing well at that point, which was past Christmas. He was playing poor from about the last 3 or 4 games of last season into this season. Doesn't stretch back as far as...
It's been longer than that. He was dropped by Sam Allardyce and was told pretty much that he had to do something more in his game. He said that himself. Said, I went to the manager and said, where can I improve? I know that I haven't performed as well as I could have done. He was very. He took a while to get back into the team when Koeman went. He finally got back in under Allardyce. He didn't really do much. Did he think he got a goal? I can't remember who it was against. It was at the Gladys Street end. It wasn't Southampton. It was another one. It was around February, March time, something like that. That was his first goal all season. But what I'm saying is, everyone's saying, yeah, I can't think of a 20-year-old who gets much abuse. I can't think of a 20-year-old in the league who's had that many games. He's played well over 50 league games now. Probably more than that, maybe past 60, and less than half those performances have said to me, yeah, you look quality, you. A lot of those games, he's just been completely forgettable, or he's been a hindrance on the pitch, and he doesn't deserve to be there. I want to stress this again. I'm not saying just give up on the lad, throw him in the bin. He's rubbish, but all I'm saying is, the lad, you can't keep playing that badly for a club like ourselves, who are aiming for what we're apparently aiming for. Would any other top six team have a 20-year-old in their team, and he can have 20, 30, 35, 40 really poor games out of about 50 or 60, and they just say, oh, leave him alone. No, it would be a case of, no, the kid's not quite ready. Let's pull him back a little bit. Let's rein him in. He's getting too much. He's getting a lot of criticism because there's a lot of other young players there, or maybe not in young, but a lot of other players who are in a similar predicament to him, who didn't get anywhere near the opportunities he's got and basically got told to get out. Players like Besic, who had his injuries, but he's basically been fully fit for a year. He got that injury in Koeman's first summer, and he came back at the start of Koeman's second summer, and he was fully fit. He was at the club from August to December when Koeman went. Didn't get a kick during that 4 month period, did not get a game, and was basically farmed off on loan to Middlesbrough and told, yeah, you're not wanted here. He's come back this summer, worked his backside off in the summer, in this pre-season, to get another chance. Didn't get another chance, got told, yeah, get out again. You're not good enough. Same with players like Dal. He's still here, but he's another young kid who's not got anywhere near the opportunities when he arguably deserves them. Another player, I don't even like Balassi, but another player like Balassi who was coming off a serious injury. You're rubbish. You're not good enough. Get rid of him. No one's going to miss him. No, hang on. He's coming off a really bad injury. He's not played anywhere near the level of performance, level of games. He's not had anywhere near the level of minutes Davis has. He's probably made more contributions in the games he has done than Davis has for the vast majority of the past 8 months. And yet, again, he's still hounded out and laughed at. Get out, you're not good enough. Players like Besic is the one who sticks. Vlasic is a good one. But a player like Vlasic, he was dying last season. He didn't get a kick. He didn't get a chance. And now he's been farmed off to Spasco. Yeah, come back in a year and we'll find there's a place for you. I don't blame a player like Vlasic or a player like Blesic, if they're sat on the wherever they are now in Middlesbrough or Russia, they're sat in their hotel and they think, but all right, I've been told to get out and I'm not good enough when I didn't get a chance. Whereas that other guy there, who's just because he's local, he's got a lot more chances than me. And if I had the amount of games he had, I wouldn't put in that many bad performances. I just think there's a double standard, yeah, but I think people are giving him a double standard just because he's local and he's got a quirky personality. I do like the kid. I don't want to dump on him. I don't want to sound like I just want to get rid of him and never see him again. But I think people are getting far too defensive about it, and he deserves a lot of the criticism he's getting. And the people who are criticising him shouldn't be just scolded and told, no, you haven't got a clue. Leave this young lad alone.
Okay, Terry, you've raised your hand. Really quick before you chime in, I would say you mentioned Besic and Vlasic. There is a chance, and we don't know the whole situation. There's a chance that Silva said, look, if you stay, you're probably not going to get much first-team football. Okay? It could be that they chose to
maybe
leave because they wanted guaranteed minutes. It's possible. I'm just, and we don't know that. I just mentioned that because I'm the devil's advocate goober. Can't help it. So anyway, Terry, you were about to, you had a question or a statement, sir.
Yeah. I'll just quickly touch on the other players you mentioned. Bezic said he wanted to go to Middlesbrough. He asked to go to Middlesbrough. That was his desire. He wanted to go there. So that's not really.
He said he wants to stay. He said he wants to stay at Everton in the preseason. He was told, basically, you're not going to get in the team. And I don't get why he's been told he's not going to get in the team and Davis is. That's my point. I don't know why Davis is getting picked over him.
That's nothing to do with Tom Davis, though. I would.
No, but what I'm saying is Besic didn't slam the door down saying, I don't want to be here. That's he wanted to stay and was basically told what Jerry said. If you want to stay, then there's no guarantees.
Terry, what do you got?
Well, first of all, you don't know what's gone on. The public statements are, I wanted to move to Middlesbrough. I wanted to come here because I enjoyed it last season. I'm going to play. Vlasic was told to train by himself, so you don't know what's gone behind the scenes there, but to come here. Now, I would have kept Bezic. I've not got a problem with Bezic. I think he's a good player. And Vlasic, whatever. Tom Davis, you say he's played 40, 50, 60 games. And being poor in a good chunk of them, half of them. Is that all his fault? How many managers did he have in that time? How many different positions? How many different partners? I'm not saying he played well in all those games. I've got eyes the same as you. He didn't. He played poor in a lot of those games. What my argument is it's not his fault but a lot of the time. He's a kid. In a lot of these games, he was a teenager still. And he's playing in Premier League games with managers like Allardyce, who want him to do one thing. Some of them are with Koeman, who want him to do another thing. Then it's got Unsworth. He's not being protected as a young player. He's being taken in and out the side. He's being asked to do different jobs. And then because he's struggling with it, young players will struggle. He's getting abuse off the crowds. He's getting his own supporters on his back. He's not getting booed or whatnot by opposition crowds. He's getting abuse screamed at him by his own fans. It's not his fault, a lot of it. I know some people like him because of his quirky personality or think that, you know, being a kid shouldn't protect you. And some people think, well, he is a kid. People need to calm down. You can't expect a 19, 20-year-old to be held to the same standards. Bezic, for example. If Bezic came in and played as badly as he did, Bezic is an international footballer. It's different. You can expect different things off different players based on their status. We are treating this 20-year-old kid like he's been here for 15 years in the first team and he's playing really badly and it's in the position he's always played in. I don't think it's his fault, and I think we're being ridiculous about Davis as a fan base.
So I was thinking about last season when Jonjo Kinney got a long run at right back. And I think, on the whole, we saw some positives, but I think all of us kind of saw a difference when Coleman came back into the squad. I think Coleman, I think we would say Coleman is a proper right back in the league. But Jonjo Kinney shows flickers, but isn't quite there. I think that's a fair way of putting that. I think it was great experience, but the situation dictated he had to play, right? And I feel like that's where we're at right now with Davis, though, is I feel like based on who we had available on Saturday, he had to play, right? It's sort of, and you know, because, and I don't know, I compare those two guys to Dowell and Lookman, other players that I want to get minutes, but I don't really want them starting over certain other players at this moment because I feel like they're not quite there, okay? Lookman may just be all in his head, okay? But he's just, I don't want him starting right now. Dowell, I feel like he's Sigurdsson light, but a little less consistency, you know what I mean? And Kenny, it was exciting to watch him play last week, right? You know, if he had a great game. But that's still not the Premier League. I think what we're talking about is, after kind of weighing what you guys are saying, I think both of you do have good points. You know, I think these are quality backups right now. They're quality backups, you know? And Paul, you said that, right, about Davies? How about you said you don't want to get rid of him, right? You said you just wanted to be treated fairly. Really, the discussion between you two guys, the friction, the point of contention, is how he's being treated at the moment. Not really his play. It's more about Terry feels like he should be treated. He should be treated more gently because he's a young guy and he hasn't been in a fair situation the past few years. And Paul says, you know what? He's a Premier League footballer, and let's treat him that way. All right? That's kind of, I feel like our audience may be completely on board with both of you. It's just down the middle, seriously, okay? So I'm not going to sit there and say that you guys are flat out wrong about any of this stuff. I think you all both bring up really good points. And they're fair. They are fair. It just depends on how you view your team. You know, how do you view this? I don't know. Sometimes tough love is good, and sometimes an arm around the shoulder is good. What do we do as supporters? You know, there are times when Tom gave the ball away, I was just saying bad words at the screen. Like, what are you thinking? That guy was too small of a window. You were not going to get that through, you know? And then there are other times where I'm like, oh, Tom, that was safe. That was well done. You know, way to knock that ball loose. So, yeah, he's polarizing right now. I feel like we always have one local guy that's polarizing, right? That we just have to decide how we feel about them, you know, because if they're not in a good run of form, right?
Yeah, before him, it was Osman, to be honest. Osman had his lovers, but Osman had his detractors. But the thing I'll say about Davies is I like a lot of what Davies does. And I think he's going to come good. I do believe that he is going to become a great player. But and there's been a lot of other local players over the past decade or two decades who you kind of think, yeah, if you weren't a local guy, I don't see you getting in many other teams. Right? I do think there's a lot of other clubs in the country that would take Davies if they had the chance to. I think that's the big difference between him and a lot of other guys. I think only him and Rooney, maybe. Rooney, Barkley, you could throw Barkley as well. They're the only three local guys who've come through in the past 3 years where I think there's a lot of other clubs in the country that would love to have him, but there's kind of a lot of other guys who just coasted, and people saw that, kind of got annoyed eventually.
You know, the unfortunate thing is I feel like the kinks in Tom's game, the main kinks, are sloppy passing, and I feel like the game is moving too quickly for him right now, for his brain, and the only way that goes away is minutes. That's the only way. It's going to go away. So it depends on when he gets those minutes, right?
No, my point would be, though, he's had an awful lot of minutes, and a lot of the players haven't had anywhere near the amount of minutes, and they were basically thrown on the scrap heap, and there's certain players who just... I think what's annoying a lot of his detractors, like myself, is there's a feeling that you can't say criticise him, otherwise people will just jump on you and say, you don't know what you're talking about, leave him alone. It's like, no, if he's going to play that badly, and he's going to play that badly in an awful lot of games, because the amount of bad games he's had does vastly outnumber the amount of good games he's had in the past 12 months, easily. And I know what Terry said, it's not all his fault, but there's just sometimes you think, no, as you said, Jerry, no, it's enough of the arm around the shoulder now. You do need a bit of tough love. If you are going to become the player we think you're going to become, then you can't just be constantly being thrown in the team and allowed to just be loved. It's like, no, at some point you have to kind of earn the adoration that you're getting. And I just don't think he's done enough of that in the past. Yeah, I hope he's going to do that. I want him to succeed more than anybody, but I'm just trying to be as real a situation as I can. I think just by telling him he's great and leave him alone, that's that's going to do more harm than good in the long run, I think. I think too much spotlight is getting put on him, and he needs to be reined in and taken out the line of fire a bit more, rather than just, no, leave him to it. It will all work itself out, and it's all going to be a happy fairy tale ending. We don't know that.
The irony is he kind of got started. His breakthrough was with Kumin, who is like the opposite of the arm around the shoulder. Kind of funny how that works, you know?
My argument would be he played best under Kumin. That was the best run of his career, mm-hmm. was under Kumin. That would be my argument. You say he needs men. My argument would be, no, when he was given the tough love approach, he responded best. And since the tough love approach, I don't know what Ardyce was like, but since the tough love approach seems to have gone, then that's when his mm-hmm. form has decreased. That's my argument. The tough love approach was working. It could work again. It's been a long enough period now where I want to see it.
All right, Terry, one last word from you, because I've been hogging your time to talk.
No, I don't think we're going to agree. I think you should get the last word. He thinks what he thinks, and I think what I think, and I'm sure the people who comment and will watch will be the judge of who they agree with. Neither are wrong, neither are right. It's all shades of grey. That's with every player and every game and every team. So
opinions, there you go. As long as you can defend it with evidence and points, I'm always going to listen. Just saying. All right, so guys, that's it for our Davies. I guess it was a 15-round bout just then. Let's check the scorecards. Scorecards will be your comments. What do you think about that? That's it for our Davies segment. So guys, this story is from October 2013, all right? And this is kind of a remember when segment. The headline is Red Bull looking to buy English football club and take them into the Champions League. Energy drinks firm are looking to add an English club to their sporting portfolio and take them into the Champions League. Billionaires Red Bull want to buy a football club in England and give it wings. to make it big. This is from The Mirror, by the way. And I think they're quoting Alan Nixon and The People, who I think now is with a different publication. Let's say that. The Austrian-based energy drinks firm are on the lookout for a suitable club, with Anglophile coach Ralf Rangnick, sporting director of Red Bull Salzburg, heading the search, as well as Austrian league leaders Salzburg. Red Bull already owns clubs in Germany, New York, Brazil, and Ghana. They were looking for an English team, and they were looking for a Premier League team. They didn't want a Championship one. He said that you can spend fortunes there and not make any progress. So, strange story. And I actually do remember this because this was in my window of being a supporter. What would have been the advantages a move like this could have brought to the club? And we can, and then we'll go, let's focus on advantages for now. And then we'll talk about the intense drawbacks. So, Terry, you want to start with this one?
I can't see there being many. I mean, if it had happened, more money to spend at a time when money went further would have been the key. We came into reasonable amount of money in the context of today, just as money was starting to be worthless. So we got a billionaire when billionaires were no longer all you needed to get by. The transfer market blew up after the Pogba deal and after the Neymar deal. So 2013, to have billionaires in charge, I suppose we would have been a lot further along in our development as a club than we are right now, because we'd have had a leg up on other teams with that amount of money. But that's probably not worth the drawbacks, but that would have been an advantage, I suppose.
Paul.
We'd have probably got rid of Chang beer a lot quicker than we ended up doing. We'd have saved ourselves 3 or 4 years of that. And, yeah, as Teddy said, we probably could have signed a £20 million striker when a £20 million striker would get you top four, or signed a just signed a lot of players and probably progressed a lot quicker than we want to progress. But Red Bull, I mean, would you like the idea of being called Red Bull Everton? No. No.
You know,
that's a big one.
You can't be called Red Bull Everton. I don't think, anyway. Maybe it's just in Germany, but that's why it's RB Leipzig, not Red Bull Leipzig.
Oh, well would you want to be RB Everton? Then, do you know what I mean? If at the time, this was during a period where, you know, we were still paupers, basically. Mascheri hadn't come along yet. It was still old Blue Bill in charge. We had no money. We're selling our best players every season. We're David Moyes is scraping by. Was David Moyes in charge? No, I think he just left David Moyes, hadn't he? But
it was October of 2013.
It was just at the start of Martin's year, but it was during that period we were still seen as a team that was just punching above our weight and had no money every season. So I can see why fans got excited about the times. Like, oh, great, we're going to get our own sugar daddy. We're going to be signing great players. We're going to be finally one of the big boys again. But looking back in hindsight now, I think it would have been probably not the right move. I think the club would have lost a lot of soul. Have you done that, to be honest? And I think soul is a very, very underrated thing in modern-day football.
Also, potentially losing branding. Yeah. That's one of the things you see. A lot of these teams, they, you know, change colors. And so, what was that?
Yeah, your crest changes all the time, doesn't it? Your badge. Mm. Like, they always...
We probably wouldn't have had that monstrosity for the season.
That's the beehive.
The Fisher-Price badge. Couldn't have been any worse than that.
To give you one positive, we could have not been RB Everton, but we could have been in the Red Bull Arena like a lot quicker. We could have a new stadium by now. I mean, it's all pie in the sky, but if you were looking for positives, that might have been one.
Yeah. I think that would have been nice. I don't know if it would have been a waterfront situation. You know what I mean? So that's the question, is based on our situation now, which is better than it was in 2013, worth the wait? You know what I mean?
I
think it was worth the wait, frankly. Mm-hmm. I'm ecstatic that we're not RB Everton with any kind of red on our shirts. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we don't need that.
I think if you go back and say to most Evertonians in, let's say, 2012, the year before this, you can either be RB Everton and have the Red Bull Arena, a big brand spanking new stadium, and sign some 20 million, 30 million players now, and be that team you want to be by 2015. But it means being RB Everton and, you know, losing a lot of what we class as the soul of the club. You can either be that now, or you can hang on for your four more seasons, and then you can have an owner who is based in Britain. We see him all the time. He's not some faceless figure from Germany, like I imagine a guy who would have run RB is. It would have been an owner who we see in the flesh, an owner who we hear from. We'll get a stadium on the waterfront again. I can't imagine any supporter thought that was going to happen after we lost the King's Dock. So you can wait 5 years and have an owner who is a billionaire, he's visible, you know who he is, he's going to speak to us, and we can have the stadium on the waterfront again. Or we can have a new owner from Germany who no one's heard of, really, or no one really knows who they are, really. They just seem like shadowy figures. There's a good chance the club's name's going to change. There's a good chance we're going to get tied into a lot of commercial deals that people kind of don't feel comfortable with. So I think if you'd have said that to an Eddie Everton fan, they would be happy with what we've got now and not what we could have had then.
Yeah, it's a tough call when you're trying to consider the soul of what you're doing versus financial gain. That, I think, is a difficult question that most people have to face often. You know what I mean? So, the fact that our club had to deal with it as well. Same questions. Potentially, that's the thing. Did this actually happen? Was this actually a thing? You know what I mean? Like, I see the looks on both of you guys' faces, like you smell something. That's a good way of, yeah.
I would file this one under Vince McMahon wants to buy Newcastle. That's the greatest transfer takeover story I heard. Vince McMahon wanted to buy Newcastle. I think that's not too far behind.
That'd be great.
I like the idea of him bringing in the Undertaker to as sporting director, and yeah, let's yeah, let's have
Well,
X Pac comes
Newcastle
in.
United.
Yeah. Guest, a guest director of football every single week. Like they do.
Jim Ross Stadium announcer.
They dictate all their player goal celebrations by making them do like wrestler celebrations. It's just, oh my gosh. Yeah, actually, this is starting to sound kind of fun, if I'm honest. Why didn't that
Not Red
happen?
Bull, though.
Oh no,
Not,
no. Red Bull's a little
no.
different. That's less fun. All right, guys. So, yeah, this was a stroll down a possible memory lane. So I guess that's it for our Remember Red Bull Everton question mark segment. So, gentlemen, we're gonna wrap up coverage this week with transfer rumors of the past. There should be an echo there. I just can't speak with an echo anymore. Guys, let's. This is apparently a thing from November 26th, 2010. We are gonna be going through this one that happened. I didn't know this was a thing. David Moyes offers David Beckham short-term loan chance at Everton. David Beckham has been offered the chance to return to the Premier League by Everton after David Moyes revealed that he would be keen to secure the former England captain on a short-term loan from LA Galaxy during the midwinter transfer window. Yeah, it's from The Guardian, that story. And yeah, and apparently they were waiting to find out what the deal was with Landon Donovan, whether or not he would be coming back. I believe that year he did not. But I think the years after that he did arrive. But Beckham was 35 at the time. Short-term loan, 35-year-old. Good idea, guys. Paul, you want to start that one off?
They sold a lot of shirts. Would have got a lot of interest off the pitch. So, would he have made a great difference on the field? Who do we have on the wings at the time? Do we still have Billy Aletinov?
Victor Anichibi.
Yeah,
I
Dayton
remember.
Robertson, well.
I remember it clearly. So it was Victor Anichibi. He was the right mid at that point.
Well, yeah, yes. Then he would have made a good impact on the pitch. But yeah, if that would have happened, it would have just been a publicity stunt, really. I don't really think there was much in that. I know David Moyes seemed to have a lot of, connections over in the MLS, didn't he? He got linked with quite a few MLS players, and he signed quite. There was quite a lot of MLS kids signed for the Everton Academy. I don't think any of them made it ultimately, but yeah, David Moyes just seemed to always have a flitting interest in players that were doing well in MLS, and this was just an easy story to write, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, David Moyes had actually managed Beckham before when he was a kid. Because when David Moyes was manager of Preston, no, sorry, I tell a lie, he didn't manage him. He played with him, so he had a
Played
connection.
with him. It's in the story. I didn't get to that part. I was going to get
Well, yeah,
there.
he played at Preston with Beckham when he went on loan to Preston when he was a young kid. So he did have a connection. So I can see why these pieces fit. Probably wasn't true. Probably. I mean, at that point, Beckham is just a brand in his own right. I think it would have been quite good for the club's marketing department, at the very least, would have given a massive shot in the arm just to be co-branded with the Beckham brand. But on the pitch, I mean, he was probably too slow at that point. Delivery was really good, but as Paul mentioned, I think we had Billy Letinov at that time, who was another slow player with a with good. He was good. Who had good crosses and good shots, but. It's all about pace. Beckham was getting too slow for the MLS at that point, so it probably wasn't true.
Yeah. I think his two short-term loans before that were with Milan, and he had scored two goals in those two loans and had like seven assists. So that tells you his service was still solid,
Yeah,
but
I think he was very well thought of in Milan, wasn't he? Was he injured for the 2010 World Cup? I think, and I remember he definitely went. He went as a bit of
yes.
a
Yeah,
side.
he
Yeah.
did something to his Achilles, I think.
Yeah, he went as kind of a bit of a sideshow, like a cheerleader. And I remember it being a bit of a story, like, oh, he's not going to play. Why is he there? But the point I'm making is, had he not been injured, he had a good shout to be in the World Cup squad because he'd done so well in his loan to Milan. So,
well, at Milan, he did well at Milan because the Serie A's a lot slower. Wouldn't have worked here. It was still all about pace.
Yeah, true. But yeah, I'm saying is basically his career didn't go out like with a whimper, did it? Really? He still played at a fairly high level till his last day. Didn't he finish at Paris Saint Germain?
Yes.
Yeah, yes, so yeah, Beckham was one of those rare players who kind of went out on his own terms at a very high level. He didn't just kind of fade away, and he hadn't been, you know, he hadn't been any good to anybody for years, like a Michael Owen or an Emil Heskey, players, England players from the same generation as him.
Evidently he was close with Phil Neville as well, and David Moyes just kind of put it out there like, hey, maybe he'll give me a call, or Phil Neville, you know. It's just kind of, I don't know. I don't know how serious this was. It seems to me like he's just kind of name-dropping to kind of get the pot stirring. But, yeah. So, next story. This is from August 19th, 2009. So, a year previous. Man City and Everton told to forget bids for Real Madrid's Arsenal fan Guti. It's either, or is it Guti?
Oh, yeah. Long guy, number 14.
It says, this is kind of, Real Madrid have told Man City and Everton not to bother following up interest in Spain midfielder, what was it? Guti?
Guti.
No, it's a hard G. It's Guti. Yes.
It is Guti?
Yeah, yeah.
See, I was trying to figure out because if he's from Spain, normally that's not a hard G, but yeah, I don't know. You guys would know. I've literally never seen the man play and registered that I've, yeah. So, evidently the Premier League, along with Galatasaray, have reportedly inquired about the Bernabeu vice-captain, but despite Madrid's desperation to offload players, neither head coach Manuel Pellegrini or director general Jorge Valdano are prepared to sanction Guti's departure. 32-year-old midfielder. It seems like that would have perhaps been a better investment of, because it would have been for longer than like a month and a half, you know what I mean? But yeah, and apparently he left like right at the next year. So
yeah.
I don't know much about the player. You guys, this would have been a pretty solid signing, right?
Yeah. I'll go first if you don't mind. Yeah. Why player who spent a very long period at Real Madrid? He was kind of, I think he's an academy player, or he was signed young. He broke through the Real Madrid team during when Florentino Perez, is that how I was saying it? The Real Madrid, where basically when the Galactico era at Real Madrid started, the early 2000s, when Figo was brought in, Ronaldo was brought in, Beckham was brought in, McManaman, all these players. Guti was kind of like that sort of more down-to-earth type player who kind of had a connection with the fans type thing. He wasn't a big superstar, but he bled the club, really worked hard. There was always a place for him in the squad. He'd always managed to get between 25 and 30 appearances in a season. And he was just, yeah, a very solid, underrated player who probably could have played a lot more matches if he had left Real Madrid. But Real Madrid's one of those clubs that, yeah, you're going to be happy to sit on the bench, aren't you? It's just, you know, it's going to take, you're not going to swap Everton, especially at that stage of your career, 32. When you're just loved at Real Madrid. Correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he's, I don't know if he still is, I know he was last season, I believe he's now the Real Madrid youth manager. I think he, when Zidane was bumped up from, if they call it Real Madrid Castilla, is that how you pronounce it? The Real Madrid B team in the lower leagues. I think when Zidane moved from there to manage the main team, I think Guti became the youth team manager, and he kind of had a bit of an outside chance to become their manager this season. Obviously, he didn't get it. It's gone to the former Spanish manager. But I still think Guti is involved at a high level at Real Madrid now. Wow. So, good luck to him.
Terry, did you get to see him play much? What kind of a midfielder are we talking about here?
Magnificent player. He doesn't get the recognition he deserves because he was in a team of superstars, the Galacticos with Figo, Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo. Raul, he was outstanding. Who can I just compare him to? He was sort of like not a defensive midfielder. He was their normal midfielder. He wasn't like, you know, skinning everyone or anything like that. But there's a highlights video of his assists that's on Twitter that went around the other day. I've just tagged you in it. You're waiting till you see some of the things he used to do. Even at 32, I don't think we'd have got him. Even if he was willing to, I think one of the bigger clubs would have come in and said, nope, we're having him. I genuinely think even at that time, he might have gone somewhere like Arsenal and had two or three years there. He was a very good player. Wow. He was a very good player.
Yeah.
Underrated because he was in a team of stars and he was an academy player. One of the glue type players who holds the players together. Like Fernandinho at City, he doesn't get all the plaudits that the De Bruyne type players get, but a brilliant player.
Wow.
Would have made a big difference.
I'm definitely going to be watching that highlights video. I'm kind of psyched now. So last...
First assist is filthy, what you see him do in the video. It's unbelievable.
Awesome. That's one of the cool things about doing these transfer rumors of the past. I'm selfishly getting hooked up with all this new knowledge. It's kind of rad. So lastly, from June 25th, 2013, and I remember this one, and I remember being kind of bummed we didn't make this happen. Martinez eyes Japan's in-form Honda with interest in midfielder Fellaini hotting up. It says, Everton are keen on signing Japan midfielder Kazuki Honda from CSKA Moscow. Honda, 27, has returned to Premier League radars by impressing at Confederations Cup, but is also being tracked by where he end up going, AC Milan. I think at the time we were looking for a number 10. We needed one pretty badly. I remember wanting one of those for a long time, kind of at the end of the Martinez era. This was 2013. So, guys, let's pretend like we signed Honda. Could this have been that number 10 that we were really looking for? Could he have done the job? Terry, you want to start this one off?
Probably not. He's quite lightweight. He's a good player, but there's been a lot of good players who've come and not really done it. I think he would have been Klaassen before Klaassen. He would have been like that. He'd have been a skillful player. Wouldn't have suited here, though. Wouldn't have suited Everton, and he wouldn't have suited this league. He was right to go to Italy, where he'd have more time, space, and wouldn't be expected to do as much physical work and as much at pace. So, good player. Wouldn't have fit here.
What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, he was one of those players who, if he was going to, he goes kind of plays anywhere across the, what's it, a number 10 or a number 7. He can play anywhere across the front three, basically, apart from being the out and out striker, which he's used occasionally. But yeah, predominantly in his career, he's been a number 10. Honda, I'd have been interested to see what he could do. I mean, he's a massive name in Asia, massive name. He'd have helped our marketing out there a lot. I think him and, is it Kagawa?
Shinji Kagawa.
Yeah, they are absolutely massive in Asia, the same way Hernandez is in Mexico, something like that. Our share sales would have gone through the roof, like Tucson and Turkey. So, yeah, I'd like to have seen what I could have done, but I think he could have got a move to a bigger club at the time, and evidently he did. He went to AC Milan, and again, AC Milan are one of those clubs, even if they've not had the best time of it the last decade, they're one of those clubs that a lot of these players from Asia or South America are going to look at and go, man, if I can go play in that stadium in front of those fans and wear that famous shirt, I'm probably going to take that, even if it means taking less money. So, yeah, Honda, we'll file that under. Disappointed we couldn't make it happen, but yeah, I don't blame the guy for swerving us one bit.
I blame him. The jerk. That is one I actually wanted to happen. I felt like we were dying for some creativity in the center at that time. It was frustrating to watch us not be able to crack into the box and just pass around. I hated watching it. Grr. Flashbacks. That's all of our transfer rumors from the past. So, guys, that wraps that segment up, but it also wraps up the big show. If you've been listening via podcast, thanks for that. Please subscribe to the Topic Blues podcast. Rate it if you can. We'd appreciate it. Leave us a kind review that says, I like when the brothers McAllister get heated. Let's make that happen more often. You know? Maybe that'll happen. So yeah, also please make sure you're subscribed to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. Yeah, we're well over 1,000 subs now, trying to get to 1,200. So thanks for that. Check out both these gentlemen. They're on the Liverpool Echo fan jury. And also you can find Paul on the Toffee Blues website. But you should just go to the Toffee Blues website in general anyway. All things Everton there. Lots of analysis from some smarties, some really smart guys that care about the game, care about Everton. Check it out. Also follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. No more plugging. I'm plugged out. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. It's always great to talk to you guys. So for Paul.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed our verbal spar and Jerry trying to, you know, keep the fight clean. But opinions are opinions. That's what everyone wants to hear, isn't it?
Indeed. All right. And for Terry?
Yeah. Take it easy, everyone. It was a spicy one this week. Enjoyed it, though. It was good.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. See you later. And we are out. Bye.